breaking news. Yesterday, another riot broke out. This time, Detroit, Michigan. Now, our own Robert Calloway, who is in Detroit Live, will give us more information on these attacks.
Thank you, Barbara. As you can probably tell, the riot is still going on right now. The cause of this riot is still unknown, but the city was a bomb waiting to explode. With the influx of migrants coming to Detroit from southern states to work in auto factories, that the city didn't have enough housing to support citizens.
Well, it seems that if people have jobs, they can afford to pay rent. Is that correct?
Well, it's tough. The housing shortage is specifically in African-American neighborhoods. Factories offer employment, but not housing. Here in the Paradise Valley neighborhood, African-American workers have been living in cramped apartments with their families, sharing with other families to make do.
What does the city of Detroit propose to do about this situation?
The city's plan was to construct a housing project for African-American workers in other neighborhoods outside Paradise Valley, and there was
disapproval, which is understanding, don't you think?
Well, it was more like a riot. A mob of more than 1,000 whites, some of whom were armed, lit a cross on fire and angrily picketed the arrival of their African-American neighbors.
Are these current riots linked to the Los Angeles riots that happened earlier in the month? For those of you listeners who haven't heard yet, the Los Angeles riots began after Navy sailors attacked young Mexican-American gang members in Los Angeles. The riots began on June the 3rd when a group of sailors stationed near Los Angeles were attacked and lasted 5 days. Over 500 people were arrested and 150 people were injured.
Yes, Barbara, and there was an incident between some sailors and young men who live in the East Los Angeles neighborhood, and then many more sailors traveled to that part of the city to join the response. What was unfortunate was that many of the sailors targeted young Mexican-American men who didn't have anything to do with the original argument. It got out of hand.
So are the Detroit riots related to the riots in Los Angeles?
Well, one could argue that the riot is at least inspired by the Los Angeles riots. So far here in Detroit, there have been 19 reported deaths. Though, because of the ongoing fighting, there are probably more deaths. There are 154 reported injuries, there have been 824 arrests and counting.
Well, it is all very unfortunate.
Oh, yes, and I think the riots here in Los Angeles are indicative of building tensions between different groups of American citizens.
Thank you, Robert, for your reporting.
In other news, as suspicion of Japanese Americans rises, the U.S. government continues to question their loyalty. We have just received information that all adults in the Japanese internment camps are being forced to answer a questionnaire about their loyalty to the U.S. Back in 1942, President Franklin Roosevelt removed 120,000 Japanese Americans from their homes and sent them to internment camps. Many people suspicious of Japanese Americans are in favor of their confinement in these camps. When asked about the questionnaires, senior U.S. officials at the War Relocation Authority said that the only way to know whether or not Japanese Americans are loyal to the U.S. is by having them respond to these questionnaires. One official in favor of these internment camps states, "The people in a rationing center are subject to the same rationing restrictions as anyone else, and that each worker gets a small cash allowance for clothing." But others, such as Dylan S. Mayer, director of the War Relocation Authority, opposed the Japanese internment camps. Dylan is hoping to get the majority of Japanese Americans out of the internment camps. "I don't care if you have a mansion to live in and beauty rest mattresses to sleep on and 3 meals a day. If you're penned up, it just doesn't seem right," he says. He also describes how family life is disrupted. "It's almost impossible for parents to develop the training and discipline that every youngster needs," Dylan says. "It isn't a normal way of life." Mayer describes the internment camps as cramped compartments where the Japanese are forcibly confined. He says they are located in the desert with hardly any water and no way of escaping. Moreover, Dylan reminds us that 2/3 of the internment camp prisoners are American citizens who were not charged with anything except having the wrong ancestors. He claims that, as a result of all this, Japanese Americans are losing their faith in democracy. In the end, we're not sure if Japanese Americans can be trusted. Will they prove their loyalty to the country or betray us for the Japanese? We're hoping that these questionnaires will help us find the answer.
Our brave American soldiers are in Europe, fighting for the freedom of our country. However, the cost of the war is great. The U.S. government has spent millions making weapons and ammunition. We need you to buy war bonds. The money spent on bonds will aid the liberation of Europe. At the end of the war, all the money you spent will be returned. This Sunday only, come watch the Brooklyn Dodgers play the New York Yankees for the price of one war bond. And if you don't have the money for the full cost of a war bond, you can buy 10-cent stamps to work towards getting a full war bond. This ad is sponsored by the War Finance Committee.
Today we will be interviewing Miss Nancy Wheeler. She has been working to help the war effort by taking up a factory job at the Philadelphia Navy Yard. If you are looking to help with the war effort, you can work there too. So, Miss Wheeler, tell us, when did you start working at the Philadelphia Navy Yard?
I started about 2 years ago.
How did you come across the job?
My husband used to work at the factory. Then he went off to work, so the factory offered me a job.
How do you feel about the job?
I'm very proud of my job. I'm glad to be helping my family in the war effort, although it's harder to take care of my family these days.
And why is that?
Well, women are paid less, and my oldest child has to take care of the others while I'm away.
So what do you do in the factory?
I produce munitions.
How do you feel about women being called unfeminine?
Well, I respect their opinion, but other women like me need money to survive. If we don't have enough people to make war supplies, the economy could crash again. The soldiers would die from lack of supplies. So the real question is, why are you hurting yourself?
Do you think you're going to be able to keep your job after the war?
No, but I would like it if I could keep my job.
Do you think women should be able to fight in the war?
Well, personally, I would rather not be involved in the bloodshed, but if women want to fight, they should be allowed to fight. If we fought in the war, we could win faster.
Thank you so much for your time today and the work you're doing in the factory.
Thank you.
Welcome, fellow Americans, and thank you for tuning in. Friendly soldiers are in need of more and more food. By buying a little less thanks to rations and by planting more victory gardens, your loved ones will have more to eat and then will have the energy to win the war. Thank you for your support in these very, very difficult times.
Good morning, listeners. This is Sean Addison reporting for WUSA. Today we will be talking about a brave airman named John L. Washington. John Washington was one of the first members of a group of men that has become known as the Tuskegee Airmen. They are known as such because of their training they underwent at the Tuskegee Airfield in Tuskegee, Alabama. The Tuskegee Airmen were the first African-American soldiers to successfully complete their training and enter the Army Air Corps, and they fought bravely to defend American bombers over Europe. As soon as John heard the call to battle, he had jumped up and ran to the nearest enlisting station. John was known to be a kind man by his family and friends. We went to his neighborhood, a poor melting pot home to many immigrants from different places around the world, to ask about Mr. Washington. However, there were also many white people there who thought that blacks should not be serving in the wars. John really wanted to prove those people who thought that African Americans could not fight were wrong, said his uncle Jeremiah. We first talked to his mother May at the neighborhood.
He was a very good boy. He loved to help other people out. When he heard on the radio that African Americans began serving in the war, he wanted to participate. I had never been so proud of my little boy after he became part of the Tuskegee Airmen.
Later, we interviewed his neighbor, Margaret.
Oh, he was the best. Always helped me cross the street and take the trash out because I was too old and could barely walk anymore. When he left, I had no one to help me around, but I was still very proud of what he was doing to help the country. Very brave.
We then went to the Tuskegee Airfield where he trained to ask some of the people he trained with about him. He was a real good pilot, you know, said his friend Cole. John had never been in a plane before, but he worked so hard that he ended up being one of the best pilots there. We tell you this story because a few days ago he was discovered in the midst of the wreckage of his P-51 Mustang. He was in bad shape. His chest was sliced open by a propeller and he had a fractured skull. They rushed him to the hospital, but it was too late. He died on the way there, surrounded by medics. He was remembered by his family and friends as a great pilot and a great man. A few days before his death, he was awarded the Presidential Unit Citation and the Congressional Gold Medal. His story will be remembered by many. Goodbye, everyone. This was Sean Addison on your weekly human interest story.
Up next, a letter from a GI named Jim from Alabama. He has a wife, Maria, and two kids, Joe and Annie. He is now fighting in Europe against Germany and Italy. Today, we have Jim's wife, Maria, in the studio to share Jim's touching words with us.
Thank you. Dear Maria and my lovely Joe and Annie, it's been interesting fighting in World War II. At first, I was in training camps trying to become a GI. I trained with all sorts of unfamiliar faces, Jews, Mexicans, African Americans. I never expected my Catholic self to be training alongside a Jew from New York. I wish y'all could see the diversity of people back in Alabama, rather than just white farmers. We were constantly exercising and doing drills until we were sent overseas to fight. Combat was anything but fun. Our rations of cold, dried food were worse than our rations at home. We had no beds, toilet paper, or showers. We marched all day through hot and cold weather and had to dig trenches. When in combat, they were shot and explosions all around us. Everyone was afraid of death. I saw my whole life flash before my eyes. Many friends got shot and died miserably. Still, I fought well and never panicked. I don't understand how I found the courage to put my life on the line like this. Even though the conditions in the military are horrible, I'm proud to serve my country and fight the Germans and Italians in Europe. Things are looking well for the Allies. Germany's defeat in Stalingrad back in February gave us a huge advantage. Still, many fellow soldiers have died in battle. I hope I come back from the war alive so I can see y'all again. Love, Jim.
What a lovely letter. Thank you, Maria, for sharing that with us today. Listeners, join us again next week for another letter from a GI.